And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd we have out there tonight in the ideas room already. I have some really interesting pieces tonight regarding the Department of Homeland Security and how it's adopting the UFO file under its wings. So we're going to have a good time tonight with this. I wasn't able to get to this in our general report. It's been a busy week. We actually did a special report on Tuesday where we took your questions and did a presentation on this whole UFO hearing thing that went down in Congress this week. It was quite interesting, as flat as that whole presentation was, to see how they were angling the whole thing towards terrorism. Made me think of a few connections that I began to draw only in the last few days from some of the more public figures that were coming forward. So we're going to get into all those tonight. We're going to go maybe a little over an hour tonight and get in there. We won't take questions tonight because we don't have the lovely Olivia, but she'll be back next week. And I see that there's a lot of familiar faces out there. Kat's out there. Gigi Young is out there. We just did a fantastic part two episode. If you haven't seen that one yet, that is up right now, and it is fantastic. That is Gigi Breakthrough on CERN and some very interesting combinations of technology and also on occult. And the combination of the two, just devastating. But the first one was so great. I mean, there was such a fantastic reaction from that. So it's great to have Gigi out there as well. And so great to have all of you. I'll try to do a shout out for everybody at the end. And I like that we're doing this. And I'm going to do it kind of casually because I wanted to share this information. It wasn't the kind of thing that really could wait. It's one of those. And when you see these connections, as the threads of those connections around the UFO file come forward, you're going to be just as amazed as I am to see the Department of Homeland Security, with its 250,000 employees, getting deployed on the UFO file front and right before the entire Congress and before the public under the auspices of this UFO hearing. Now, here's the thing about UFO hearings. They're generally done in science and technology sectors in the Congress. They're, so the science office would handle it, Office of Research and Development, that kind of thing. You shouldn't get them in counterterrorism places. This is the first warning sign. Two, all the people are connected from the head of the committee to the people who were speaking. They're all committed and connected to the Central Intelligence Agency or the DHS. So this is another big red flag. And, I saw a few UFO researchers doing a victory lap for getting this thing going. Well, I'm glad you're feeling good because, now you can walk arm in arm with the Department of Homeland Security. That doesn't sound like such a hot idea. How about the UFO field takes another look at this and the people that are involved and get a handle that the whole transfer to UAP is code language for you have a UFO threat and you're going to have a Department of Defense response to it, which comes out of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Department of Homeland Security. Those two groups, the DHS and the CIA, have gotten a run afoul of the law more often than any other group inside the government. That's number one. Two, they're notorious for not telling the truth. Three, they're both unconstitutional, extra constitutional agencies. That's crucial and that's key. So we're going to get into all that tonight. And some of the people that we've covered on this, Avril Haines, for example, the Director of National Intelligence, and Kirsten Gillibrand, the Senator from New York, who suddenly is just an expert on UFOs and leads this whole effort and is telling everyone we have to come through with this thing. Marco Rubio, the presidential candidate and neocon from Florida. All those people we've put out there and we've done reports on all the dirty dealings going on with that group and this push from the TTSA CIA side around the UFO file. Now, this is really important. And some people can take UFOs or leave them and some people are obsessed. And I know how important the UFO file is in all of this. So for me, I want us to go down through it very carefully to understand the nature of the people that we're dealing with on this, and that it's very dangerous. In fact, when you get those types of people involved on something that is generally a scientific interest or even a parapsychological interest, but to get all the military and Department of Homeland Security and the CIA and that whole trip involved at this level, you know, you can see protecting secrets from other countries. That's been going on for 80 years around this. But the problem is they've been protecting those things from us. And after a while, instead of just this kind of benign protection, it turns into what? A wall of secrecy. And we all get stuck behind the wrong side of that wall. We're on the East Berlin side of the wall. And as long as we're on that East Berlin side of the wall, and the CIA and the DHS are holding the key on the other side, the free side, they're going to continue to grow and expand. I want to tell you that it's extraordinary for any office of the government to reach 250,000 employees, but particularly Homeland Security, which has a very narrow job description, in fact, and wasn't even in existence, of course, until the September 11th attacks. Now, you could easily say, look, you know, the Department of Defense is capable. They just amp up the Department of Defense, and that's all they would need. But they wanted this other thing because they wanted to introduce the idea of the homeland and how this whole thing around homeland security, homeland this, homeland that, has nothing to do with the United States. It's just some imaginary homeland thing. And in that homeland, these guys are in charge, and NORTHCOM is in charge. So these are the types of things that we need to deal with on our side to see what they've been up to. And you could say, well, it's 20 years out from 9/11. We've learned to live with the threat of terrorism or whatever. But what they've done is they've created a climate of terrorism. And now after, you know, going after Al-Qaeda and extremist Muslims and, you know, very often grabbing the wrong people or droning, you know, wedding parties to try to get one guy. As we had the drone king in there, John Brennan, who was Obama's CIA director. Well, this guy, you know, he came out and he was so excited. He said, look, we really need to go after these UFOs. But he only did that in the last year. Before that, it was all mum's the word. And he's like, that darn government needs to give us the answers on UFOs. Of course, he sat inside the halls of the CIA. He knows everything about UFOs as the director. So a lot of these people doing the, we need to get this out of the government. I saw the director of Homeland Security doing this. And a lot of the people that were being called before these committees, this is ridiculous. They are the government. And they're getting guaranteed in public saying, well, don't mention that here. We'll go into closed session with that. Well, closed session, you get the real stuff, or they do a better snow job than they do to the public. And the public gets left out, and you guys suddenly are interested and become UFO experts. I want to point out some of these experts because they have a very interesting past. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're jumping right into this special report on the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, CIA takeover of the UFO file. Yeah, takeover. That's kind of, you know, exactly the word that we're looking at. We're going to go about an hour with this, and it's great to have a full house with everyone. I know it's your Saturday night, and we're all here to have a good time and learn something, right? I have to say that, you know, it's been extraordinary, too, since this hearing, because there were a lot of weird things around the original op that were going on, the whole Elizondo op and all that claptrap that was going on in the last week before that, because he was starting to be exposed by the New York Post and others as not having led ATIP and for having lied in public again, as we've covered him for the last 4 years, lie after lie after lie after lie. So Lou Elizondo, part of the TTSA push, and this is CIA disclosure, very distinct and different from actual UFO disclosure. And that's something to consider too, which is that the UFO file and all the things around it are so very interesting. And it is these people with their, you know, tyrannical craziness going on in the background with the secrecy that are making it into this, you know, battlefield, and which UFOs have nothing to do with that. They're an unusual anomaly that our human civilization have lived with for thousands of years. And it's an unusual mystery, and it's good to get to the bottom of it. But the government is never going to get you anything on that front. Let's get serious. And, you know, I think they're obligated to, and the way it can work is a ground up, a bottom up type approach maybe can make that happen. Instead, we have this top down thing where they want to sort of grab it. And that's part of this exchange that took place in Congress where they were saying, God damn, those amateurs going after this. Is there a way we can prosecute them? You know, and we have this defense guy Moultrie sitting there and saying, well, we're looking at that. And, you know, maybe we can have some consultation in Congress. You guys can make a law that independent researchers, you know, can be thrown in prison for talking about the UFO file. This is how they think about it. They like to control things. And this is an old Rockefeller game, in fact, which is if you don't run all the railroads, you don't have anything. You have to monopolize the whole bit. And so the Bezos crowd and, you know, all the Google thing and all that, their whole thing is about centralization. And they certainly are pulling this with the UFO file as well. I want to remind everyone before we go any further to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our newsletter. This is what's going to keep us in touch during this remarkable censorship that we're seeing going on, which I'll tell you is just off the charts. And, you know, we've been shadow banned heavily, but we managed to keep pushing through that. I know other people have experienced that, of course, Joseph Farrell, Gigi, Catherine Fitz, RFK Jr., anyone who's putting out anything that's contrary to the popular narrative. And that includes all this stuff around the WHO takeover piece and, you know, what they're floating out about monkeypox and all that. And yeah, they said that they found, you know, the first one in Jamaica Plain here, right in Massachusetts. Boy, that warms my soul to be part of this operation. But they are, you know, they're always positioning around this. But I think that we need to think of it a little bit differently, which is whether it's UFOs or this medical takeover, financial coup d'etat, and, you know, the whole thing about domestic terrorism and this whole piece that the Biden administration, Stepford Biden, was trying to push with the DGB, which the Homeland Security has now put on hold because it's so damn unpopular. And everybody just screamed, that's too Orwellian, even for us. And so now, you know, they froze that and Nina supposedly resigned there for personal reasons. You know, it was just, this is more of the Stepford Biden administration and the disaster that they are, but they would love an emergency to take that 26% approval rating that they have and turn it into the ability to govern. That's what our friends in Canada tried to do. Trudeau as well, pushing the emergency button during the trucker protest, that whole thing. And he had what, 28% approval? These people don't have enough approval to govern. So emergency powers are their only way out. And they like that anyway, because they're all, you know, authoritarian at heart, let's face it. So they're just dying to put those emergency measures in place. You're going to hear a lot more about that, of course, as we go. All right, so let's start with the cast of characters, shall we? This is very interesting. I noticed that I was trying to figure out how these people all got together and started talking about UFOs, because none of them have any real background in it, except Gillibrand is very interesting because her father, the senator from California, from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, her father in law was in charge of British aerospace for 25 years. And so she has those deep, deep links in there. But she's also connected through her family on her husband's side to the Nexium cult, as was her husband's mother. This guy was actually the lawyer for the Nexium cult. And of course, the Nexium cult and Keith Raniere and all the shenanigans about branding people and the, you know, the whole sort of over-the-top sexual orgy shenanigans that they had going on. And human trafficking as well. And he's in prison now for 40 years. But what's not been explained very well is this connection that Gillibrand has with the Nexium cult. So we're stuck right there with her immediately. Then she becomes the lead face of the UFO thing. By the way, she also ran for president in 2020. She didn't get very far, but it shows where this is going. And one of the things I like to point out is, you know, they could easily make someone a real UFO expert on one of these committees and then go into the whole UFO emergency and, you know, oh, we have this event happening, you know, we need somebody who has that experience. And then Gillibrand walks forward like the Manchurian candidate. And that could very well be what they're cooking up. But anyway, on this committee about adoption, I found three of the major players who are involved in our story tonight. And I'm going to point out a couple of them here. Up here is a newcomer, Mike Gallagher, born in 1984. He's part of the National Intelligence University, which is very strange. It got absorbed, actually, by Avril Haines in her Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Gallagher started talking about how aliens were us from the future and so on and so on. I kid you not. This guy is on task and is born in 1984, and he's a relative newcomer in all this. No background, no history in aviation or anything like that. No UFO experience at all. Okay, over here, Ruben Gallego. Gallego is interesting. We actually included him on a show. He went under a totally different name and appearance when he was here at Harvard. And guess what he was in charge of? Our friend Ruben. He was in charge of psychological operations. That's what he was studying for the Iraq War. And he also, his expertise was in psychological operations for crowd control. Now, this guy is the leading advocate around the UAP. We need UAP transparency. You can't say the word UFO because, you know, he'll explode. And his wife, who is now his ex-wife, is the mayor of Phoenix, of course, Phoenix of the Phoenix Lights. And then, of course, there's Gillibrand. So this is a very innocent little committee that's doing adoption and stuff. But here they are all working together. I found that interesting just in terms of the links of who we're talking about and how they're getting together. Well, that's one direct connection. Gillibrand leading the entire push for this UFO office. And that's not a regular, like, we need government transparency type thing. That is, we need to set up a UFO threat in order for the CIA to, you know, create this false threat piece. And we have a whole office of UFO defense. All this money flows through there. And the CIA gets their ultimate emergency wet dream, which is there's an alien attack and we're in charge. Lockdown in your house will protect you. Yeah, well, they're they're not so good at protecting people, unfortunately. But they're good at getting them killed. So I'll give them some credit there, huh? All right, so Gillibrand, New York. All right, Gallagher, Wisconsin, and he was also part of Governor Walker's reelection attempt over there. Now, I want to read, Gallagher really interests me a lot because he is suddenly the one who's really pushing hard, and I think that they've decided to push him more than Gallego. And here's an article now, this is in Politico, Gallagher presses DOD on UAPs. Again, you can't mention UFO, right? and also he's pressing the DOD. First of all, this guy is a CIA recruit. He comes out of the National Intelligence University. He's a Marines intel officer for 12 years. So he's not pushing the government for anything. He is the government. He's part of the hiding part. So this idea that, oh, hey, you've got your hero in Congress going after this. No. And we have to get dum-dums like Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly, you know, formerly of Fox News and one still with Fox News. You know, it's nice that Tucker does the stuff that he does, but he's really out of the loop on UFOs. I mean, really bad. And he's pumping up Elizondo, who didn't even direct a program that he claims he directed doesn't even exist. It came out. So that's not good journalism. And Megyn Kelly, forget it. You know, I know you get bored sitting in your mansion with all those millions and stuff, but, you know, try to get some things right. If you're going to go into this UFO thing, then, you know, don't walk around promoting this guy. You know, can a friend of Megan's out there get real about this? You know, I mean, he's a CIA agent pushing a UFO threat propaganda thing by pretending to be something he's not. Is that what you really want to be a part of? Whatever happened to the kind of journalism that you wanted to do? This is interesting to me too, because I'm seeing a lot of these types come out of retirement or expand their portfolio to explore all these subjects that we've been exploring in an honest fashion in the alternative media. And the alternative media has gained the attention of people. And now this is an attempt by those corporate, well-funded astroturfing corporations to go back in here and say, hey, we'll cover all this stuff. You got UFOs from the future, you know, we want UFO disclosure, all this stuff, but it's all phony, just kind of grabbing the attention and grabbing the headlines without doing the real hardcore journalism. Because if they did, this guy, you know, wouldn't have even made janitor on that program. But instead, they were touting him as, I'm the leader of this program, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what we found out in reference to Elizondo, who came out with the TTSA group in 2017 under the guise of being a disgruntled whistleblower from the Department of Defense, is that, you know, he worked in counterintelligence for the Department of Defense, yes, but there's nothing that ties him to any UFO research program. And he himself has now come out and said, they tasked me in 2008 to go after the UFO community with the same tools of counterintelligence I've applied before. So they're basically saying, hey, this is the UFO community, use this off. And in fact, in many ways, it's worked, because you have a lot of people who are not very well informed buying into the phony Elizondo story. That's dangerous. That's one level of stupidity. But the other level of stupidity is people like Megyn Kelly trying to be hip and cool and say, hey, I know all about UFOs, and pulling on this fraudster to, you know, say, oh, you were in charge of secret UFOs. But he wasn't, and he's never been able to prove it. And I've offered him on a number of occasions, just for those who are like, hey, give him a chance. I've offered him the chance for a gentleman's debate. What he does instead is the people that he's against, he makes up things about them being felons and all this stuff, which he did this whole Felon Five thing in relation to Stephen Greenstreet at the New York Post and John Greenwald from the Black Vault. And then try to lie his way out of that too. So this is how these guys play. They're playing for all the marbles of the op in the narrative. And we've been able to smash the op in many ways, but it's huge. So it has a lot of different tentacles. So when one side goes down, they open up this other one, because there's a lot of money, there's big money at stake with this. But more important, there's control. And you're always going to find at the heart of control the Central Intelligence Agency and their friends, the enforcement arm, the Department of Homeland Security, both unconstitutional, extra-constitutional, and in the case of the CIA, wanted for crimes against humanity. And, you know, that's from many, many different countries. So, you know, that's an agency that's completely out of hand, has their own air force. So if we don't get this stuff under control, it's going to be very hard going forward as a country to have the kind of transparency that's so definitely necessary. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. We're going deep in here tonight, and it's great to have so many of you with us. I wanted to show those links from the Department of Homeland Security, which is why I did this special session with you tonight, and we'll go about another 45 minutes, and it's just great to have everyone here. We have Kat out there running the ideas room, and we will be taking your questions next week. It's very exciting indeed. All right, so we'll keep going into the cast of characters. I want to stick with Gallagher for a minute. Now, Gallagher is the he is actually the congressman from Wisconsin, as I said, and has a very heavy, heavy-duty intelligence background. But he comes off, he's married to like some Broadway actress, and he comes off as just this like, hey, you know, I'm going to talk about all these cool things about UFOs and stuff. He's the new boy on all this, and they really want to push this angle. The problem is his background has nothing that would reflect UFOs. It's just all about intelligence, you know, and the kind of malarkey games that the Central Intelligence Agency and the Director of National Intelligence plays. Now, here's the piece that he was so key on. Wisconsin Representative Mike Gallagher, UFOs could be us from the future. That's a congressman. That's the United States congressman. How much are these guys trying to take the public interest in a subject that they've surveyed and convert it over into their own demographic so that they can say, oh, you know, we're covering all the bases here? Now, this is very hardcore, and this is actually part of the real newsflash from that UFO hearing, which is Gallagher is going out there and saying, I believe in time travel, right? That's pretty hardcore. That's even more hardcore than saying you believe in aliens, in fact. So they're on the move there, and they're on the move with trying to grab every piece of the attention of the American people around and around the globe and convert their interests into this narrative, the centralization narrative, the emergency powers narrative. And I'm going to show you how they're doing this. Let's hang with Gallagher for a minute. Appearing on the Pat McAfee show the day after the hearing, Gallagher suggested one possibility that hadn't been considered for unresolved UAP sightings, in addition to foreign adversaries or extraterrestrials, is that they could be our own technology going back in time to our present. All right. Go back 200 years and you would say, you guys don't have cars, internet, good machine guns. What's going on? Gallagher said. So go from our point in history forward 200 years and whoever's left. At that point, if we can avoid making ourselves, nuking ourselves, is going to say, wait, you guys can bend space and time. We figured that out like 50,100 years ago. This is really unusual rhetoric for a congressman. And where they're going with it, I think, is over into the trial balloon of can they capture the public by people starting to become aware around these subjects. You know, people are listening to G.G. Young's work. People are listening to Farrell or some of the things we cover on this show. And can they convert that whole thing by saying, hey, we're talking about what you're talking about, but can they get all of that stuff under the umbrella of the UFO threat? That's crucial for them. One of the other things that has been pointed out in this regard is the whole origin story around humanity and the Musk part. That's one something that Gigi covered for us last week, the whole Musk Mars cult. This is very important, and I advise you to get a handle on the Mars cult aspect of this, because changing that origin story, they've got only a couple of options. They've got the Atlantis story, which, as we've rolled out here through the mystery schools, has a real hardcore past that's provable. And they've kept those records over generations. But they, in popular archaeology, regular archaeology, always banned the A word. You know, guys like Graham Hancock and stuff would get into terrible career-destroying trouble for even mentioning it. And so, you know, we have to see why the sea changed. Now they're talking about, well, there could be like, you know, Atlanteans here and they're out to get us and they're a threat too. So we're going to, you know, they could be coming in their ships from underwater. So the next thing is going to be after the UFO threat, the Atlantean threat, right? Oh my God. And so they're working on the fact that, you know, people have been sitting around watching shows like The Expanse and things like that. And which is very low level, in my opinion, the types of things that Netflix has rolled out. But we're just in this soup where a lot of hardcore researchers have brought forward a number of fascinating concepts. And what's happened is it's been, you know, sort of milked down, watered down into this whole thing that you get the popularization. And that's how a culture handles things. You know, they do stranger things instead of taking on a real MK Ultra story, right? They need some gateway in. But that's what they like to do. They like to on the popularity side. But now what they're seeing is, and they do this a lot with the superhero movies as well, they're like, well, people have kind of dumbed down into this whole superhero thing. Let's give them a fantasy story, you know, and let's mix in the truth part with it, but never let them get access to the actual thing. And so, we'll make them think that they're discovering this whole new paradigm. But in fact, it's been out there through the mystery schools and through the work, even of Aldous Huxley and people of like this, who really were giving us so many of these pieces over time. So I think it's very cynical ploy in that way to say right now they're running, different types of trial balloons. The UFO threat is one. There's a civilization out there. They're off-world civilization. And they're against us. That is a parody of the real truth that we've been visited by off-world civilizations. Then there's a USO threat. And that could be some Atlantean culture that's advanced. They're starting to weigh into this as well. But that's a parody of the mystery school, the true history of our history. And I've said before that I think the Atlantean disclosure is actually a bigger disclosure than the UFO disclosure, because that is in regard to us and our past and what we can do, as opposed to meeting peers from some other part of the galaxy. And so therefore the Atlantean part has always been shunned by archaeology. But the mystery schools, and particularly the work of Edgar Cayce, have put it out there, Rudolf Steiner as well, Theosophy, Gurdjieff. They've given us that background. There was an advanced culture back there that was more advanced than this one. And the crucial thing is that they could do a lot of it with their mind. And so, you know, we have to keep ourselves sort of in check around what they dish out, and on an official level, because there's always been a desperation, especially since we're talking about UFOs, I'll go with the UFO part, but there's always been a desperation for credibility, and they have hungered for credibility. But it was the Central Intelligence Agency, it must be remembered, that took all that away by constantly making the media ridicule the subject so they could continue to work on it in secrecy and hide it from the public. So in fact, the UFO field and those researchers really, in many ways, you know, had their careers destroyed one way or another by the secrecy. So now when an opportunity comes up, the CIA person pops up and the TTSA corporation is behind him. They all think, oh, my life is all set. See, I've been right all along. I've been right. I can sit down at my dinner table with my family who didn't believe me, and they'll believe me now. But unfortunately, the type of disclosure that you're getting is threat disclosure. It's not, isn't it wonderful? We might be making contact with another race, or scientifically we've observed something. It's all about, we have to arm space, right? Because there's an alien invasion. That's totally different. And it leads us in a completely wrong direction of thought. Here's Obama's weighing in on it. Now, Obama was in office for 8 years, said nothing, and I mean nothing significant about UFOs, didn't do anything to move the conversation forward in public at all. Zip. But as soon as the CIA op starts to get off the ground, suddenly he wants to grandstand and jump on there too. Obama predicts new religions could arise if proof of aliens discovered, right? And he's like, oh, there's a lot of UFOs out there, and, you know, we need to really get to the bottom of it. What are they trying to tell us? This thing, you know, the people who've been working on psychological operations, the Galileo type people, in the back rooms at the CIA and at the DHS, they've been sitting there going, well, you know, we could say there's a benevolent race coming in, and that's the whole Avi Loeb op, which is, we need to get our AI up to snuff because Oumuamua came into our solar system, and that's a probe from another solar system where they're advanced AI, and they're trying to talk to our AI, so we need to get our AI up to snuff where it can talk to them. That's one op. That's a more scientific-based op. And then, you know, they'll introduce this story, they'll try this out, that the probe came in and said, your environment's in trouble and you need to carbon tax your people. That's what they, you know, would roll that out as. Now, I'm not saying the environment isn't in trouble. I've actually been one of these people on the alternative side who says that in the alternative media, we should grab the environmental aspect and roll it into, so we can get something honest going about it. Of course, with nuclear tests, of course, with the type of pollution the corporations do, they've affected our air and they've affected the food supply and all these different things. That's real. But who's responsible for it, ultimately? Who's sitting with all the profits for it? And who has the money to pay for it? Not people in carbon taxes. They've already taken those people's small business jobs and you know, their livelihoods, their homes. No, the people who can pay for it are with all this money on their balance sheet are the corporations, from Amazon to Apple and Google. That's where you should go. Those were the people who decimated so much of the ecology. Therefore, they have the money to pay for it. Now, if we talked about those companies giving up, say, a tenth of their income every year to clean up the environment, they'd shut up immediately about it. That's why, you know, they like to fly around in private planes, and, you know, there's no seriousness to them when they do this stuff. They use all of the modern amenities and all the rest. And guys like Gates have proven that. He has no interest in climate change or anything else except as a device for control and a way to say, oh, you know, to tell a story to the mass subconscious of humanity to get them to do exactly what they want. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. We're going deep here on the Department of Homeland Security and the Central Intelligence Agency takeover of the UFO file, using a threat narrative and these very interesting connections. I'm going to draw these connections even tighter. I think Gallagher has really been a standout so far, and this guy is one to watch. You know, what I think is foolhardiness on the part of the alternative or UFO style of reporting would be to say, oh, you know, we're breaking those barriers, that glass ceiling, and getting that disclosure. No, I want to know the background on Gallagher and who gave him the go-ahead to introduce this idea of future aliens, because they want more options. They don't just want, okay, we got the killer aliens from outer space, we have the deadly underwater Atlanteans. They want other stuff. They don't just want AI from Oumuamua. What else do they want? Ah, humans from the future. Well, these are all very old concepts. Again, these are parodies of what's been out there in the alternative field since how long? I mean, the Casey work, 1915, 1916, that started, you know, Steiner's first book, 1897, you know, Theosophy, 1875. I mean, they floated this stuff out for a long time. So the mystery schools have really paved the subconscious understanding of humanity with these ideas. And now this group studying that stuff is trying to go in there and just explode that and redirect it into this narrative control that they're so, so good at. And yet sometimes when they get so obvious, the thing starts to fall apart, and they do cut personnel. So, you know, if you see somebody like Elizondo take a tumble, it'll just be because he's not useful to them anymore. And they'll pick up another, you know, counterintelligence guy to use, because their whole thing is just about moving it forward. The way I've studied intelligence, there's not a lot of loyalty going on. They are very engaged. They may talk a good game about loyalty to their people, but they're very engaged on their missions and what they want to accomplish, especially when it comes to narrative stuff. So, you know, some idea that these people are, you know, going to hang in there even when the going gets tough with one of their ops. No, they'll get out, and they'll probably participate in taking that person down. This is the interesting thing. So when I say there's not a lack of loyalty, you know, there's a certain contempt they have for lack of success. So Gallagher, I think, is one of their new ops. Galejo, we covered, and I am keeping an eye on anyone who has that big psychological operations background, and they keep showing up on this UFO front. And to see a number of them involved in the hearings was disturbing. There's no question about it. Gallagher being a real heavy hitter on this. Last quote from Gallagher, again, you know, here he is. They could be us from the future, those UFOs, right? Has anyone ever heard of Gallagher before and him talking about UFOs before that hearing? I think that would be a resounding no. All right. So he says, there's some scientific basis for this hypothesis, and that it has been considered more plausible than other theories by serious people with credentialed backgrounds who have looked into the question. What's funny is I listened to this interview, and what he said was, I've been talking with billionaires who believe this. All right, so who are the billionaires? And why do they believe it? And why are they talking to you? That was a weird thing. It was a very telltale little thing. Sometimes people just can't keep it down, even if they're in intelligence. And they say, billionaires tell me. Well, probably then, if you're talking to billionaires, they're thinking, oh, we can use this guy. And they're the ones who put this idea in your head that you can take this meme that's been out there in the alternative community and turn it into some real bank for the CIA. So he finishes off by saying, I'm not a technologist. There is technology technically that can do teleportation of something called neutrinos, and technology that proves subatomic particles can move faster than the speed of light. Einstein tells us that's true. Theoretically, time travel is possible, he said. So we're getting the time travel thing from this congressman. So that is the third hypothesis. People in the future, us, have figured out how to bend space and time. It's our technology coming back from the future. So for me, I mean, that's that's actually gigantic that this guy is rolling out this op on that front. The other major piece came about through some Department of Homeland Security people, and we're going to get into that now. Let's see what time we're at here. All right, so we'll go for another half hour or so on there. It's great to have so many of you here with us out there in the ideas room, just fantastic. And this connection with the Department of Homeland Security is just something I couldn't wait. So thank you for joining me. The Honorable Ronald Moultrie, he was the one who was answering most of the questions. He was the undersecretary. He is the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security. But I'll tell you some very, very strange things about him. Prior to becoming Undersecretary of Defense, Mr. Moultrie had a 36-year career in senior leadership positions in the National Intelligence Community, Central Intelligence. Central Intelligence Agency, Senior Intelligence Service. That's where Semivan comes from. Semivan was the person who started the TTSA op, and he pulled in who? Elizondo and Tom DeLonge. So that whole thing comes out of the senior sector of the Central Intelligence Agency. So here's this guy, comes out of that same branch. Moultrie's previous national intelligence roles included his service as a senior member of the Central Intelligence Agency, Senior Intelligence Service, responsible for a major office within the Directorate of Science and Technology. So he's won the CIA Donovan Award. Okay, so they love him, and he's done his intelligence part. Now, Moultrie is interesting because he engaged in a conversation with a congressman from Illinois, and he was going back and forth on these things, and the question answer, which was all set up in advance, obviously, was all about how do you persecute amateurs, people who are studying the UFO file without the, you know, kind of rubber stamping from on high of the Central Intelligence Agency or the DHS. And he said, well, you know, we can look at that with Congress. That is the idea, that they can prosecute people for looking into UFOs on their own. So, you know, that's very, very dangerous. And doing this whole UFO hearing under the auspices of counterterrorism, again, the idea is you're making someone, you know, it's as if people who are researching things on their own are going to become the terrorists, they're going to become Al-Qaeda, and they're using this Homeland Security apparatus that was set up in a different time during the 2001 attacks, which, as we know, there's never been any real answers on that either. But I keep seeing all kinds of crossover with the Department of Homeland Security, UFOs, and 9/11. One of them that's just glaring out there in public is the fact that Leslie Kane, who started the whole New York Times push and with the op around Elizondo and has continued to support him 100%, even after all these things have come out, her uncle is Governor Thomas Kane. And he was what? The leader of the 9/11 commission. So at the very least, you have shady political overhang. I think that, you know, there's been a lot of very strange moves with this, including the enrichment of these people. You know, you've got Kane doing writing scripts for Elizondo's biography movie that they're going to do on HBO. I mean, I kid you not. This is where they're heading with this. And that type of network very often is CIA rewards. This is how they roll things. So they're pushing it. And we find ourselves right in the middle of it, but isn't it interesting that the people who get around the UFO op, a lot of doors start to open for them on this front. So you have to wonder who's giving the word down to expand and push their story as opposed to go hard on them. Look, when someone comes out and say, I ran a UFO program in the shadows for a decade, you have to really check them out hardcore. And when you start to do that and you find inconsistencies and they start to freak out and call you a felon and stuff, then you really know that you're onto something. You know that. So investigative journalism must be understood. What it generally is, it's not easygoing stuff. It's adversarial. Because if, for example, you find a company that's dumping chemicals in a river, well, you going after the past of the CEO is not going to be very nice. You know, it's not going to be high fives and smiles. I mean, that's hardcore. And you're going to try to get who this person is, what they're doing, and you're going to try to figure out you know, what's going on. So this is the same nature of the thing. Instead, you have all of the, you know, so the UFO community is very lightweight. There's nobody there to stem the flow when the CIA rolls in and creates this off. That's a big problem. And the people who were sort of good candidates for standing up to this thing all folded immediately. As a matter of fact, they threatened. I mean, you know, threat is kind of a big word, but they generally gave the impression to other researchers that they'd be left out, you know. And so there's not a lot of character there. But remember, the CIA decimated the field in the first place. So you had very slim, slim group. Some of the better people passed on as well, like Stan Friedman and stuff. So you're left in a weird situation. John Mack died under unusual circumstances in England. Those were really people involved in the field who, if something like this came up, could have really applied methods of real research. And instead, what we have are people like Nick Pope, who comes out of the UK version of the DOD. So that's not that's not very helpful. All right, let's keep going. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence absorbs National Intelligence University. This is weird. It only happened this year. And that's Avril Haines in the Biden administration that did that. Now, the National Intelligence University, that includes our friend Mike Gallagher. And there's quite a few notables around this UAP op who are involved with this National Intelligence University. But now something else happened about that university. So it got sucked into the office of the ODNI. And I've pointed out before with Haines, Haines was John Brennan's understudy when he was running the CIA for the Obama administration. So she was known as the Drone Queen because she would kept trying to come up with these sort of legal reasons why they could go and drone people, including an American citizen that they did a drone strike against. He was on foreign soil, but he was an American citizen, technically entitled to constitutional rights of trial and all the rest of it. But they found him to be engaging in terrorist activity, and he got a drone. That's the way it was. But anyway, so the Drone Queen now has a new job, and she's really the top dog now because they have a very weak CIA director, and she's the director of National Intelligence, which really incorporates all branches of intelligence. And she's the one who's doing the big UAP push. So her thing is UFOs buzzing, U.S. warships may be aliens. That's really big. That's really big for her to say that. So the UFO threat, you can see it's building and it's building. Another piece around this, of course, is the continuity of government piece, which we talked about very often on this program. And the continuity of government people at NORTHCOM also have their own interesting little segues around the UFO file, which I'm going to get into here as well. Before I jump on that, just to back up that piece about Gillibrand, Senator Gillibrand's effort to study UFOs likely to become law. In fact, it did, because she, with Marco Rubio's help, was able to attach it to the National Defense Authorization Act, which holds $800 billion, close to $1 trillion, for all the defense departments, even though we're technically not at war, except because Stepford Biden got us involved in the Ukraine-Russia war. But every year, you know, they talk about, oh, there's such division in Congress and all the rest. Well, every Democrat and every Republican signs on to that $800 billion National Defense Authorization Act. What she and Rubio were able to do, which I think is very clever, and it was a very backdoor activity, they were able to put in this UFO office piece, the ASRO. And the ASRO, that is the Anomaly Surveillance and Resolution Office. The other one, AOI-MSG, or AIMSOG, one of the worst names in history, Airborne Object Identification and Management Synchronization Group. They were able to attach these things into that defense authorization bill. And they were doing it by blocking it, because if a senator says, I want to read this or whatever, it slows the whole process down, and they always try to rush it through. And so they were saying, oh, no, unless you put this UFO office in there, you can't do it. So these people are the front people for the UFO threat. They think that they can work through this defense corridor and create a UFO defense office and department, and then they can use that for their intelligence friends to create a UFO threat op, the event, as it were. And this is the ultimate emergency powers event, because if you're under attack by aliens, you know, people are going to give up their rights. I mean, look what they did for the COVID op. You know, you're already, that's like a test run for so much of this. So here we are in the middle of it. Now, you can say, well, they haven't done a UFO, you know, threat op yet. They haven't really done this, so maybe it won't happen. They have it in place. I mean, emergency powers, they've been working on false flag emergency powers. You know, we've seen it all the way back. I mean, it's much further back than this, but even in the case of Adolf Hitler, you know, the whole thing about him gaining power in 1933 was all based on the Reichstag fire, and the idea that the communists are after us, you need to give me power. This is something called the Enabling Act. It enabled him to ban other parties. So I become the hotshot because I've got the emergency on my hand. And that's just one example. We've seen them over the years, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Oh my God, our ships are under attack. Later, when they went through and figured that out, oh, nobody was shooting at those ships. But it's too late because they already invested our people and our money and our blood and treasure in these things. WMD in Iraq, the CIA said, this is a slam dunk. George Tenet is in the Oval Office with George Bush, and he says, don't worry, you know, I know that he has these weapons of mass destruction. Then we roll in there, destroy all these people's lives, and there's no weapons of mass destruction. So the idea that, you know, that it's like they've been laying these things out. And even though we get to prove them wrong after the fact, they get to explode these operations, and they get to destroy people's lives and shape the world, shape the economy, shape history. And they just roll from op to op. Look at Karl Rove, right? He gets $1 million jobs as an advisor, but he was the key man in promoting this whole thing with Bush and the Iraq war. So there are no penalties. That's what you find out. So just like we're going to see in relation to Ukraine and the things that are going on there, when it starts to come out later, that a lot of this is engineered, and that we had a role actually in activating this whole process by not slowing down in relation to Ukraine and NATO, then, you know, instead we're writing these big checks, $40 billion, while we're in the middle of food shortages, and Stepford Biden has given us, with his 26% approval rating, the highest inflation since 1981. This is serious, serious business. And all but 12 senators passed that. All the 12 senators were Republican. All the Democrats voted for it across the board. The only resistance, 12 Republican senators. You know, what are you going to do? Where's the resistance going to come from on those types of things? Dishing out billions of dollars to Ukraine, where our interests are limited, and also where you're kind of giving them money to prolong a war that what they should do actually is lose and get terms with Russia, because Russia's going to win eventually. You know, they're making that into another Afghanistan, Vietnam. It's like, you can't win it. You just sit there with all our stuff, and eventually some, you know, either Europeans or American troops are going to get picked off, so they could draw us in further. And there's no peace process involved there either. Remember, all these people that we saw in relation to the UFO hearings are in some way, one way or another, involved directly with the defense posture of the United States. So they're contributing to this whole Ukraine mess. Are those the types of people? Like, there's no honesty going on, for sure. So are those the types of people we want running, you know, interstellar relations? They should at least have to prove there's a threat, right? So, you know, we have all these things going on. We have to be more educated on this. And that comes from studying the black budget, the secret space program, the actual UFO file research that we do on this program. Gigi Young does it. Dr. Farrell does it. There's some great people who do it. Other people gave up on real UFO research and joined in the TTSA circuit. So they in the circus. And so they split off. And so you got CIA circus, weird disclosure thing over here, Elizondo, and they've pushed other people off a cliff with them. You know, some of them good researchers like Knapp and Dolan, they got wrapped up all in that stuff and defending it. And now that it's been exposed, they won't come out and say anything about it. So they're lost to history. I mean, I don't, you know, I wish them the best, but I don't have any interest in following their work anymore, because now I wonder if they were ever telling the truth, because they're not telling the truth about this stuff. So that's bothersome. It's not personal. It's just on a professional basis. They're caving to the CIA narratives, and not just them, but if guys like Pope and all the rest. There's a lot of caving, and it is very, very disturbing. And I try not to emphasize it. And, you know, what you would hope is that those people would go back to doing good research. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. Everyone, you are watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're going deep here on the DHS takeover of the UFO file and with their pals, the Central Intelligence Agency. We are going to go, we'll go another round here. I'll go about 20 minutes. It's fantastic to have so many of you with us. And I will take your questions next week when we have Miss Olivia back with us for this. I wanted to make sure that we got this report out, however, because I feel like the timing and to get the wheels turning on the DHS aspect, especially with all the incredible connections that we're finding. And Gallagher is a big piece of this, them having Gallagher come out and talk about this whole, time travel piece. Watch that. That's something I think that's going to take off. Okay, more on the Homeland Security. Okay, so the director of Homeland Security was actually born in Cuba. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? He was born in Havana. And it's Alejandro Mayorkas. And he's pushing back. He was promoting the whole DGB, the Disinformation Governance Board, that they have paused now. As I said, Nina stepped down and all the rest. And there was incredible pushback, thank God, by the public and the alternative media. See, the alternative media has a major role. This is one of the things that they can't stand. But anyway, Mayorkas went out there all over the place and said, we need to do this. We need to shut down conversation. It's dangerous. And he was trying to build this whole thing. This guy in charge of 250,000 employees, and not technically, I mean, he's an American citizen, but not born in America. So that's kind of a strange position for somebody who is tasked with defending America, you know, not to say that there aren't immigrants who are incredible patriots. Of course, on some level, we're all immigrants. That's not what I mean. But I mean, in particular with the Department of Homeland Security, just like in the Constitution, they put in there, you can't run for president if you weren't born in this country. And there's a reason for that, because there's a certain kind of loyalty that comes from being born here. It doesn't mean that people who immigrate here can't be great patriots. Of course they can be. But when it comes to the leadership role of the actual department that heads up defending the United States, it should be an American. I don't think that there's any doubt about that at all. So this guy's background bothered me right off the bat. I mean, him being born in Cuba was the least of it, in fact, but Cuba comes up so, you know, and of course the Cuban people are fantastic. And I've learned a lot, from people sending me articles, who are in Cuba and all about Cuban archaeology and the things I'm working on in relation to the hot zone. So, you know, I think that Cuba has this incredible ability, but the whole tie over and the thing that, you know, his parents fled, just like this whole story about Rubio. Oh, his parents fled. And then Elizondo, my parents fled, but my dad was part of the Bay of Pigs thing. Well, we have to look and study at that history because, of course, President Kennedy, you know, they tried to trick him the first 2 months in office with going in with a full-scale invasion of Cuba because the CIA had lined this up. So the Central Intelligence Agency, through the director, Alan Dulles, thought we can hoodwink this guy and he'll get stuck with it. But he decided not to go for it. And he, you know, because of the disaster, they had the conversation, Dulles and Kennedy. And Kennedy said, look, if this were England, I'd have to go. But this is America. You have to go. So Kennedy got rid of him and the whole kind of disastrous group that he was with, including his deputy, Charles Cabell. That's all the Bay of Pigs aspect. There are deeper aspects to what they were doing with Bay of Pigs besides just taking over Cuba. But there is that weird overhang of this group and Kennedy kind of resisting that takeover group. And everywhere I turn around this latest UFO op, whether it's Elizondo or this guy who's leading the Department of Homeland Security, I keep running into the Bay of Pigs, which I find very interesting. But let's get a couple of things going about the Department of Homeland Security on this. So we find Mayorkas now trying to put together this Orwellian board, which says, you know, you can't express dissent. Then we had Moultrie, who was the gentleman that they were asking all these, the defense official they were asking all these questions of, and he's the one who said, maybe we can find a way to prosecute people who are independently looking into UFOs. Literally, this is how the conversation went. I played it in the previous report from Tuesday, if you want to hear it. I don't have it handy. But that is astonishing. Now let's go back a little bit. Remember, this op, we're still in the middle of this operation. You've got Chris Mellon. You've got DeLong, who was the Bobo for the whole CIA operation. And then we have Elizondo, who's still active. As much as, you know, they've had to save him on a number of occasions. And now a lot is exposed, but unfortunately, he's able to go into the uninformed media, people like Megyn Kelly, as we showed earlier, Tucker Carlson, and walk in there and say, I was the head of this program. All right, some honest journalism from The Intercept from last year. The media loves the UFO expert who says he worked for an obscure Pentagon program. Did he? This is the first thing you'd ask as a journalist. Did this guy do what he says that he did? Can he prove it? Then no discernible evidence that Lou Elizondo ever worked for a government UFO program, much less led one. And that's, of course, the reporting that came out through Stephen Greenstreet's article on the New York Post. I want to preface it by saying this is kind of brave, too, because Greenstreet was a real heavy-duty promoter of Elizondo. But later he said, you know, Elizondo groomed me to promote him, basically. So those are the types of admissions that we need. Why can't we get them from the Leslie Canes and Knapps and Dolans? That's what we should be seeing. Instead, they're doubling down, you know, and those types of people, what I particularly resent is that, and I have to put this on the record in the most polite way I can, is that they claimed that the people who wouldn't go along with their op would be made to look foolish. I didn't like that. Two, they also said that whoever didn't go along with the TTSA op was paranoid or had mental issues. So it was like they were trying to set up a scenario where it's our way or the highway, so that they were getting rid of any dissent. Now, these were people in the UFO field who have built themselves up as defenders of justice and have said, oh, you know, we're the ones who are taking on that government. That government has to give us the truth. Elizondo is still saying that. But he works for the government. I pointed that out multiple times. And I asked these people who were interviewing him, can you ask him if he works for the government now? Because I know through my own research that he is. And in his role as counterintelligence agent, if he was given the instructions to lie to the American people as part of that job, he would have to. So therefore, that would be the end of the op in about a 3-minute conversation. But instead, they've allowed these types of things to go on. Now, these people have also said, when I brought up they're trying to do a UFO threat thing, and I want to point out, because I always name names because I'm honest about it, but Dolan in particular was the guy who came out and said, they're not trying to push a UFO threat. You know, it's not happening. There's no CIA takeover. Somebody who's been in the business and studying the stuff for 2 decades. Well, look, UFOs pose national security threat, lawmakers warn. That's the headline that came out of that hearing. The media has been saying this for years. Who could miss that unless you were trying to miss it? So this is a problem. Now, I say at a certain point that you kind of have to leave other researchers to do what they want. But I do want to point it out as a point of the field, that you're going to have to say, where do you stand on something? So if you don't feel, you know, if you want to stand on the side that Elizondo is legit and the CIA is good to get information from, fine. But broadcast that, you know, have that be part of what people understand about you. Don't hide and throw shade at people who expose the fact that this guy worked for 20 years doing, you know, counterintelligence, and that he is on a CIA mission with this, and that his own background is disintegrating. Now, when you think about it, and the things that he said about what that background included, and I think it's really legit to call this out, because if somebody has a story that extraordinary, then they have to have the ability to back it up. And if they don't, then they should be called a fraud. And that's not, you know, that isn't aggressive. That is, and it's not ad hominem or any of those things. It's actually good journalism, because if somebody lies about something in public and gets caught doing it, then that's part of journalism. That's it. It's not personal. Remember, investigative journalism is adversarial. It's just not personal. But it's definitely going to get adversarial if you're trying to get to something. You know, if somebody has mafia ties, for example, and you have to figure out what their mafia ties are, you know, there's no polite way to do that. If they're connected to the mafia, they're connected to the mafia. And that doesn't have to be personal. It's just a fact to put on the record. Let's go with ATIP, the name. All right. Elizondo came out and said, I ran ATIP. And he said it was called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. And then they changed it to Advanced Aviation, and then Advanced Aerospace Aviation. They went back and forth. And then Aerial, there was a third name. This is something that John Greenwald at the Black Vault picked up on, and we did several shows on it. And I think guys like Greenstreet and Greenwald, I'll give them credit that they wanted to work with and be open to these people having real answers for this. But at a certain point, they realized they were being used. That type of candor is crucial. You know, we need that type of candor. Okay, very simple. From Harry Reid's actual letter, this something that came up in Greenstreet's report. The name of the program that he allocated the $22 million for through Congress secretly was OSAP. This is the actual program. Over and over again, Elizondo's gone on the record saying, I have nothing to do with OSAP. I don't need to show you 100 tweets. It's on the record. Everyone knows that one. So he says, I've never had anything to do with OSAP. And anyone who says that I do is going to screw loose and all that kind of rhetoric, the way that this guy does. All right, so this is Harry Reid's letter where he says, there's no program that's called Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. It is a unclassified nickname. It's a nickname for OSAP. So there's no program. Remember, ATIP is Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program with a P at the end. There's no program for ATIP. It doesn't exist as a program. OSAP was the program. Elizondo said, I have nothing to do with it. This is the other end of that. ATIP. So the unclassified nickname that had nothing to do with it doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's a nickname for an actual program. So then when Elizondo comes forward, he says, I was the head of ATIP and all the rest of it. Later he backs down a little bit and says, I was involved with it. Then he says, oh, I had a leadership role. You know, and so it's all over the place. And then the fact is now in reporting in places, even like CNN, when they do this, they're saying the alleged program, because now they know, because this reporting has come out, that there was no ATIP. ATIP was the weird fiction that was cooked up by TTSA and people like Kane and Dolan and that whole gang went along with it. That's just the fact. And there was a real program called OSAP, and the director of that program came forward and went on the record and said, you know, actually 97% of that program was about the paranormal. You know, we investigated Skinwalker Ranch, werewolves and all that. 3% of it was UFOs. So where does the Elizondo op come from? If he wasn't the leader of a UFO program, number one, why did he come out and say that? Two, why did these people promote him? And three, why did the entire media universe go along with it, including most of the UFO field, when there was no proof to it? So we get into a very, very interesting territory about how an op is created, who's behind it, and what is it for? Well, Elizondo's op was the threat. It was the UFO threat part and him being a part of it. And, you know, he's a liberating character. that has to be like a very crucial understanding on our side, that this was an op from the beginning. It's an intelligence operation. That's the other piece. That's why when TTSA floats out there, what do you have? 100 years of experience of top-level CIA people launching a company. Why didn't that ring off a bunch of red flags in the media and the UFO community? I still don't know. People walking around with that. And I would do shows over and over again. Look, Semi Van, he's the senior level CIA operator. By the way, he also claims to be a contactee. So does John Ramirez, right? Their new thing is, hey, CIA contactees, you know? So this is op stuff, and it's heavy op stuff. And it's really, there's a lot of mental lightweights out there buying it. So it becomes dangerous on that level. And when it goes by that level and there's no scrutiny, then they get emboldened. And so those types of situations are dangerous. That's where I think the Homeland Security setting for the UFO hearing came from, because they're starting to say, hey, we can rifle right through to this UFO threat part. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're going deep here on this incredible DHS CIA takeover of the UFO file. And it's great to have so many of you here. I'm going to be taking your questions next week, but I'll shut some people out at the end. I want to mention a couple of other things. And I want to remind everyone again to watch this fantastic episode with Gigi Young, which really is one of my favorite episodes. Part two just came out yesterday. And talking about CERN and going deep only as Gigi can on that stuff. Definitely a fantastic episode. Well done. I wanted to show something on this Washington Post reporting. UFO hearing features historic testimony from Pentagon officials. You notice everything's historic this and historic that. And part of the thing that this guy is showing, actually, they showed some of the worst footage in history. It was obviously weather balloon was one of them. And, you know, some of the stuff was so funny. It was like the jokester, the Corbell stuff, you know, all the circusy weird stuff. And he's like, beach balls are attacking this ship off of San Diego. And he was like, the Department of Defense leaked this to me from the UAP task force. You got it, baby? Well, you know, my vibe on this is just, you know, he's one of those guys who likes to cash in. That doesn't even really bother me. I mean, I just think that there's kind of a bozo level that's going to come in around the marketing side with UFOs. It always happens, and you're not going to be able to stop that. But Fox News bringing people like that and having their tagline be UFO expert. What does UFO expert actually mean? How does somebody become a UFO expert? Someone could be an expert around contactees. I think someone like Stan Friedman was an expert on UFOs because he had studied how the whole thing had happened. But how does Corbell qualify as a UFO expert for making one bad movie about Bob Lazar? You know, so we have to be kind of real about this and, you know, the whole like weaponize the truth and all this kind of stuff. Those are just marketing slogans that people sit down and carve out. So we shouldn't really give that the heft and the weight that it gets. I think that's just one, there's one particular line of studying these things, which I think is kind of the circus line, and that's very heavily manipulated by intelligence agencies. So I guess we're talking about two completely different lines of research is basically what it boils down to. There's the UFO file research, which includes information going all the way back to Donald Kehoe, who said that there was a group inside the national security state which was suppressing the UFO file, and he called them the Silence Group. It sounds a lot, when I study his stuff, like the X-Protect group that I uncovered researching this. And their entire goal was to obfuscate and to twist stories when they would come out, and that's where a lot of the Men in Black activity comes from. All right, so this is a quote now from our friend Kehoe, who, you know, he was very interesting. He actually had a long relationship with Lindbergh, and he was one of these Air Force guys who came out and said, look, you know, we need to get to the bottom of this. He had seen a number of unusual objects with Lindbergh. Quote, during my long investigations of these strange objects, I've seen many reports verified by Air Force intelligence, detailed accounts by Air Force pilots, radar operators, and other trained observers, proving that UFOs are high-speed craft superior to anything built on Earth. 1958. So they have someone that they roll out for this UFO hearing. Okay, it's 2022. And so, you know, we're talking 60 some odd years later, and they say the same thing, but it's 60 some odd years later. So, you know, sometimes I hear from people, well, if you don't believe TTSA, don't you believe the Navy pilots? You know, Navy pilots have nothing to do with TTSA. I mean, they are independent pilots who put this on the record. That's been going on for a long time. I have a 1947 naval report from a Navy pilot who saw it off an aircraft carrier. And so, you know, we're already, these things have been on the record. So the idea that this is something new is kind of ridiculous. The other thing about, you know, this being discovered in 2017 because the New York Times ran an article on it is pathetic. I mean, previously, by the way, the New York Times used to just bash on the subject endlessly. And the CIA came out, which I've shown on this program many times, and said in 2015, remember all those sightings in the 50s, 60s, and 70s? It was us. That was us. We were testing our own aircraft and, you know, we're just freaking people out just to happen that way, but we needed that secrecy. So that's how they were, you know, before. Now you get CIA directors going, we have to get that government to give us real UFO info. You guys are the government. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're going deep, deep, the special report on the DHS and CIA UFO takeover. It's great to be with so many of you tonight. I'll do a couple more minutes, and it's great to see everyone out there. Thank you, Kat, for being out there running the ideas room. I know we got Gigi out there, and I'll do some shout outs for some great people we have joining us tonight in the ideas room. We'll take your questions next week when we have Miss Olivia back. Okay, who have I left out? Three people. Ah, this is interesting. Scott Bray, Deputy Director of Naval Intelligence, and Ronald Moultrie, who I mentioned previously. He's the one who said we should find a way to be able to prosecute independent investigators of this because they muck up the waters from what the government wants to portray UFOs as. And he said, I'll work with Congress to figure out how we can punish those SOBs. This is fascinating. I mean, that was the most fascist moment of the whole thing. And the guy who was asking him, the representative from Illinois, when I went into his background, he had been the U.S. attorney out of Las Vegas previous to becoming the Chicago congressman. So in that position, he had access to and would prosecute cases around Area 51, et cetera. So there's a lot of strange things and trial balloons that came out of that UFO hearing, along with all the flat material and the lack of excitement from the way that they were handling it. I do feel part of the op is to bore people, to pretend that they're getting the truth and to really bore them to a certain extent, and then hit them over the head and say, hey, remember we told you about this UFO threat? Well, guess what, baby? The real thing's here and you're under emergency power, so get prepared to be locked down. All right. So Mike Gallagher, a couple of things to put on the record. Rand, the defense contractor, he worked for them. National Intelligence University, as I went through, strange thing happened. They got absorbed this year by the director of National Intelligence Office. That's a weird thing. And I think that the people spinning out of that National Intelligence University are all involved. We're seeing them come up over and over again, like Gallagher, in relation to UAPs, right? This new threat idea of UFOs. He also worked for Petraeus. He was in the Marines. He was an intel officer in the Marines for a decade, and he worked for CENTCOM. So quite a portfolio back there. And my question is this, of course, you know, you can have people with a great intelligence background. That's actually a good thing that they do. That's not the point. The point is, why are all these people surfacing around the UFO file and becoming the face of the UFO file now? And how do they coordinate with each other, the nature of this thing? And why the UFO threat aspect, as we've demonstrated? Kirsten Gillibrand, connection, aerospace. The aerospace piece is huge with this. Lockheed Martin, Boeing, British Aerospace. They have, not only have they recreated this technology on many levels, they are the main group. Remember, Steve Justice was one of the people involved with TTSA. These are the people who had the ability to look at UFO wreckage and redevelop it. And there was this corridor that came up between the intelligence community and the aerospace companies that got outside of the executive purview. This goes back to John F. Kennedy and his battle with the Central Intelligence Agency. Kennedy was very aware, because of his knowledge of the space program and creation of a larger version of that space program. And that's where a lot of that battle comes from. Let's not forget Douglas Caddy went on the record that his friend, personal friend in private, E. Howard Hunt, the top CIA guy under President Kennedy's era and after, he said President Kennedy was assassinated. Why? Because of the UFO file and his wanting to share that with the Russians so that there wouldn't be tensions. That that was Caddy's explanation, Hunt's explanation to Caddy in private. Then it echoes, it lingers. And the first time I heard it from Caddy, it lingered, and it lingers now 7 years later. And there's a lot that to go on the record with that. But here's the thing. If you have a hearing like the one we had, the first question, if you wanted real transparency, would be what? Is there a group that has been deployed to suppress this over the past 8 decades? And what are the means that they use to destroy careers? Was assassination involved? And then were political figures involved who were assassinated? That would be the first question. And then they could say, well, I don't know, you know, whatever, but they have to, it has to go on the record, because that's where you're coming from. To just say, are there UFOs? And for somebody else to say, well, there's something out there, when we know damn well they've been studying it for over 80 years, that's a joke. Okay, so the general public can absorb that, but we need to give the general public the tools through our research here, and that's what we're trying to do. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. We'll go another five minutes here. And I'm going to keep going through the roll call. Next up, Marco Rubio, who we described earlier. Rubio, from TMZ to NBC, has just been going crazy on this UFO. He was early out of the gate. But here's another strange fit for somebody who wants to create a UFO office. Well, he did it with Gillibrand, and that's a Democrat. They worked together to make sure it was part of the NDAA. So that's a big one. It's a huge red flag as to why Rubio is in the middle of that. What does Rubio have in his background? He's a neocon. That's one. Two, he's run for president. They want to run him again. And again, you have that hot zone connection. So there's something with that. The hot zone comes up over and over again whenever you get around aerospace. You can't get away from it, which I find very fascinating, as you know. All right. Ruben Gallego, Arizona congressman, was here at Harvard, and he came out studying psychological operations. He did Afghanistan, went to Iraq, and then what he was in charge of was crowd control via psychological operations. So I instantly don't like him being the big guy pushing hard. We need that UFP transparency. Well, look. Do these people have any background in UFO research at all? I mean, even a little? Doesn't seem like it. They're just being hoisted on the public. And suddenly every once in a while now, I turn around and there's a new congressman who's super into this. Representative Andre Carson, who chaired the entire thing, okay? Department of Homeland Security, fusion centers. That's what he was in charge of. DHS, CIA connection. He was on an episode of Ancient Aliens, I kid you not. So, you know, we have to start to understand what they're doing. They're pulling from the narratives that are popular in the media. So Carson, I think, is important. But again, what is Carson's interest in UFOs, really? I mean, why is this guy the chair of this thing. Why is he even interested? Did anyone ask him that? Oh, it's always been a great interest of mine since I was 12 years old and I saw my first UFO. You know, give me something. Suddenly you just show up and you're the chair of the UFO committee. Averill Haynes, of course, director of national intelligence. She's the one who said, oh, it might be aliens attacking our ships. You're the leader of the national, you know, director of national intelligence for America. Around the world, they hear that, and they hear that you think that aliens are attacking your ships. So for her to get on board to that level, they had UAP Day in Washington, I kid you not, and Avi Loeb, whose astrophysics lab is right over here, and who's been pushing the whole bit. I have a, that's the last thing I have, which is his Galileo project, which was supposed to be the scientific endeavor, okay, of finding out about UFOs. What did we get instead? Mellon and Elizondo are research affiliates. Mellon and Elizondo come directly out of the National Security State Operation, Central Intelligence Agency, DIA, and of course, Mellon, the Mellon family. Of course, we had John Warner, his cousin, on here telling us, yeah, that, you know, he's part of, Mellon's part of this operation. So for Avi Loeb to be taking on these kind of CIA and military types into what was primarily a scientific endeavor, here's the Cambridge, Massachusetts, I'm embarrassed to say, press release for it. Today, the Galileo Project lead, Professor Avi Loeb, announced the additions of Elizondo, Mr. Louis Elizondo, and Mr. Christopher Mellon to the project team as research affiliates, noting the depth of their experience investigating the subject of unidentified aerial phenomena, UAP. You mean UFOs? UFOs, right? No, it's UAP. And their shared interest in open and transparent study of the phenomena. Loeb welcomed them as the latest members of a diverse, growing Galileo Project team. Yeah, it's all growing with CIA people and Intel people and the Averill Haynes crowd. And so you have Haynes and Loeb doing UAP Day in Washington, sitting down there and saying, oh, our ships are really being harassed. You know, this is bad. We're under threat. Glowing red orb, wild UFO theories move from shadows to Congress. Part of this, I feel, is they're moving the market share of people being interested in this into trying to get that to fund their programs. And remember what I started the program off with. They're so wildly unpopular in Congress. The Biden administration is under 30% in terms of their approval rating. Other leaders around the world close by, like Trudeau in Canada, you know, operating with like 22% approval ratings. These people need the emergency. They need the emergency powers in order to govern. And we know we saw Trudeau push the button on that. We just heard that they've done these drills now with Stepford Biden where, you know, he's doing the whole, I'm going to go to the bunker in case there's a nuke attack that we provoke by sticking our nose in the Ukraine situation on Russia's doorstep. And, you know, I've been seeing newspaper articles running around saying what? Well, they're saying, well, maybe there, a limited nuclear exchange wouldn't be too bad, would it? You know, like let Russia know that we're up for a limited nuclear exchange. I mean, craziness, real craziness. You know, getting involved in a war with Russia is about as crazy a thing as I can imagine. And dumping all our money into the Ukraine is just absurd. So everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist program. Great to have so many of you here wrapping up this report. And I'll wrap it up in style with General Van Herk, who took over NORTHCOM. I want to remind you to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our newsletter. That's the best way for us to stay in touch. And it's really remarkable with all the incredible censorship that we're seeing. I can't believe it. You know, somebody sent me a list of, they typed Dark Journalist into YouTube and they got my channel at the top and then a bunch of other junk. But if you did, you know, if you typed in somebody else, you'd get their channel and all their videos. But with me, it's like I get one little thing at the top and then a bunch of CNN results. And that's the type of thing that we've experienced for a long time in this program. But I don't bellyache a lot about it because we reach, you know, we're reaching people. And my feeling is if it came down to it, I would do the whole thing right off this phone if I had to. And so that type of censorship that we've seen should make you wonder, you know, about exactly why this is the conversation that they don't want people having. And we need to keep in mind why. always why are they up to what they're up to. But in any case, that newsletter helps us because it's just a direct link and a line between the two of us. And it's a free newsletter. It comes out once a week and just lets you know the fabulous, incredible shows that we have coming up for you, like the one we just had with Gigi Young on CERN. Dr. Joseph Farrell is coming up, Catherine Austin Fitz, and some real surprises on the interview front, the documentary front, and the event front, all rolling out for you this summer. So make sure you're counted and accounted for there with the newsletter, and sign up there. It just takes a minute for you to do. Okay, let's do this. General Van Herk. I'm just going to go through this straight up. Van Herk is the NORTHCOM commander. Now, he got put in place after Esper during the Trump administration. That summer before the election, actually, Esper switched out. And it was very interesting because I was doing a lot of reports on the other NORTHCOM commander. And suddenly I felt like Newsweek and other and Politico and stuff yelling at me. I thought, this is weird, you know. And the guy at Newsweek who is like, you know, written books about continuity of government, when I suggested that I knew who his source was for who was saying all these things. And what he was saying was, we're doing drills in the background, just in case Trump decides to take power. Like they were doing basically treasonous drills in case Trump decided to do this. And I said, you know, the only person who could be talking about this was Terence O'Shaughnessy, who was the NORTHCOM commander at the time and who had just retired at the age of 53. And so that was my best guess. But boy, did they freak out. They were like, how dare you say that? You, sir, are Captain Kangaroo. This was their great insult from this guy who's written like 12 books about intergovernment things. So he flipped out and Newsweek blocked me. That's pretty good, getting blocked by Newsweek. I thought, you know, I think I'm onto something. But Van Herk, there's a few very interesting things about Van Herk. The first thing I point out about it is that his career comes directly out of the 509th bomb group, which is the same bomb group that Jesse Marcel was part of, who was completely connected, was the first intelligence officer on the scene at the Roswell incident. But Van Herk has a very interesting trajectory, because when O'Shaughnessy is replaced by Esper, who gets fired, Esper gets fired a couple of days after the election. That's a weird thing for a president to do. I'm going to fire the defense secretary when I only have 2 months left in my administration. Trump knew something was up there, and I've surmised that this is all continuity of government play. And part of this was because there was a film that came out when they claimed that Trump had COVID, and Dr. Joseph Farrell noticed something very interesting about it, which is the scene seemed to be moving as if he were on a ship. And I said, you know, they're being very strange about Trump with COVID. But what I surmised is that with all the talk that they came out about continuity of government, and, you know, we've covered continuity of government on this program, basically everything that I learned about it, I learned from Professor Peter Dale Scott. And you know, we have a series of interviews on here, and he's just, you know, Professor Scott is just a treasure on this. But he was talking about it and researching it when nobody cared about it, nobody talked about it at all. He's also the one who coined the phrase the deep state, by the way. And I always recommend his American Deep State book. It's just, you know, it's essential reading. If you don't have that book, you don't quite understand what's going on in the background. But one of the things I want to point out here is that continuity of government is a program that's been there since Roosevelt, in fact, but it had sort of, it made sense during the Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower era, because the idea was to survive a nuclear war. And of course, we'd still want to do that. But the secrecy, the layers of secrecy that developed into continuity of government as a result of how they were running the program is that a covert government was developing, because you were developing underground bunkers, you were developing control systems, and there was a whole employee force. There was no oversight from Congress after a certain point. And one of the things that Professor Scott has pointed out is that so many of the individuals involved in deep events, from the JFK assassination all the way up to the COVID thing, they all have had some interaction, some connection with that continuity of government group and the communications network. I've pointed out the people before, Ollie North, John Dean was a major contributor to the emergency management program of COG during just before his job for Nixon. And I think Professor Scott even told me that his girlfriend was as well. But some of the Watergate burglars were involved with COG. James McCord, very, very interesting. Winston Lawson, who was the Secret Service agent that got President Kennedy to Dallas, he's the one who pegged out the route. But he used the COG secret communications network setting up the trip. They hadn't done that before. So there's all these threads of COG. Of course, Cheney and Rumsfeld were deep, deep in setting up COG, the new version, which was like any emergency and we go into COG. The continuity of government program is to guarantee that in the event of an emergency, usually a military emergency, that we have a command structure if the main one is taken out. That all makes sense. I'm talking about what they did with it. And what they did with it, there's been a huge exploiting of that secrecy and the powers that come with it. And so the way that we have things set up after 9/11, right now we're under emergency. We're under an emergency, the September 11th emergency still, and every president signs on to that. As I'm fond of pointing that out, Democrat or Republican, it doesn't matter. But Van Herk is interesting because should continuity of government get called, he becomes the combatant commander of the entire, he's basically your president. And so continuity of government during the end of the Trump administration, when they were looking at Trump, I think they were thinking, if we can't get him out, this is what we're going to do. And so suddenly Nancy Pelosi was like, I just got briefed by continuity of government. They never used to talk about this stuff in public. This is remarkable that this was happening. And actually, they used to shame people for bringing it up in Congress and being like, we can only talk about that in closed session. And then even then, maybe not. So, you know, we have to get our heads wrapped around the fact that suddenly they love talking about continuity of government. And that guy, William Arkin, who gave me a big hassle on Twitter, he became the big point man. And I asked Professor Scott, I said, what do you think of Arkin and his continuity of government work? You know, because he talks about JSOC and some of these other groups that are ready to take over in the event of emergency. And he said, well, you know, he does great research. I've used his research, but he never comes to any of those conclusions or points out any of the key players. That's kind of a problem. So the fact that Cheney and Rumsfeld and all those people activated continuity of government during the 9/11 crisis is also important. And that's something that they couldn't get answers for when Thomas Kane, the uncle of Leslie Kane, who's involved deeply now in this whole UFO promotion, New York Times and Elizondo, he couldn't get any of those answers on continuity of government. It's just like, oh, they wouldn't answer any of the questions. Interestingly enough, we recently discovered that Mike Pence, that Congress actually called continuity of government during J6, interestingly enough, which may have been why that whole thing was set up in the first place. And that Mike Pence, when they sent a car for him to be taken away to this secret base or continuity of government trial, test out, he refused it. He said, I'm not taking the car, the COG car, to bring me to this underground bunker. So this is very, you know, we have to kind of keep these things in mind. When you get around the COG thing and you look at the UFO emergency part, you can start to see, if they pull a UFO emergency, a false flag UFO emergency, which they seem to be gearing up for by having all these hearings done in counterterrorism and run by the Department of Homeland Security, that's the thing that they want to run. And I think that the COVID emergency piece was like a tryout. You know, it was like, what happens? How many people resist? Who are the people who resist? What types of people resist? So I think that these things have to go into our thinking when we're getting into the UFO thing. And it's not about any one person or, you know, we have a lot of people. I do think it's legitimate to focus on people like Elizondo, because if they come out and say, I've seen all this secret stuff and my life is in danger. But then he's like, oh, I haven't violated my NDA. You say, well, you know, if you have a non-disclosure agreement with the government and you haven't violated it, so how is anything in danger? I don't get it. And so those types of intel answers, the dancing answers. Well, it was classified, but wasn't really classified. It's very important for us to break through and expose those types of people who come forward and say that they're doing these things, especially when they take that kind of mantle of saying, I was the head of the secret program, which we now know does not exist. So if someone says to you, well, he led ATIP, say there's no such thing. That's a fact. There is no ATIP. It was a nickname for another program, OSAP, which he said he had nothing to do with. So these are the types of things I think that we need in terms of clarity. And when you have people in the UFO field, it's unfortunate, but when you have them skirting over that fact because they want to be in the TV show or the documentary, or they want to, you know, get involved with TTSA or Elizondo or something, you know, that's too bad, but that's not going, we're not going in that direction. And if we, you know, if we're operating in a space publicly of research, you know, things do get called out. That's just the nature of journalism and research. And it doesn't have to be personal at all, but it does, you know, investigative journalism requires that kind of adversarial, I'm going to get to the truth banter. You won't get any. And in this case, it's absolutely crucial. And I think in some small way, we have them on the ropes because so many of their original creations around this whole thing have fallen apart. And with that, everyone, I'm going to leave you and I will be on this. But remember, the DHS presence around the UFO file and the CIA pushing of a UFO threat operation is dangerous, and we need to get to the bottom of it. And when we have people out there pushing it, you know, even blindly, like Tucker and Megyn Kelly and people like that, maybe, you know, we should fill up their email and say, in a polite way, and say, you know, you might not know who you are dealing with. And like, have you seen this history? Have you seen these shows? Have you seen these articles, New York Post and other places, that question the veracity of some of the claims being made by these people? So that, you know, when you get these people trying to come into the space that we're doing in alternative media, whether it's the UFO file or the Atlantis subject or CERN or anything, that they can come in at least informed. And if they're just coming in to grab market share, then, you know, that should be exposed too, because, you know, so long and for so many years, those people have blocked out these truth avenues. And we've been out here, a number of us, and people have lived and died doing this kind of work. You know, think about guys like Mike Rupert with 9/11 and Stan Friedman with UFOs. I mean, people have gone through their entire lives, and it was that type of mentality of whitewashing them and keeping that wall of secrecy in place that in many cases, their careers were limited or destroyed. So that's a part of this conversation too. That should be front and center when they do those UAP hearings, which are UFO hearings. Forget about UAP. That is a device. There's no, UAP is a dumb word. Let's just stop using it. We'll let them use it. All right. I'll get off on this and we'll be back with you shortly. Have great interviews coming up. And of course, a great show for you next Friday. Let's see who we got out there. And Global Atlantis, it's great to see you, sir. Stephanie Stalkowitz. Do not obey, do not comply. I like that. Chris Kringle, it's a great name. Trigger warning, COG equals ZOG. Interesting. Yeah, Al-Qaeda. Check out election results in Australia. Yes, isn't that interesting? Well, it tells us a lot. It certainly tells us a lot. I'm going to be checking it out some more. Brenda Fisher, thank you so much. I know Gigi was out there. Thank you, Gigi. Real great to see you. Kat Goida. Gypsy Moon. Havadian. I'm digitizing music for a DJ set. Yes. Now you're talking. We need some of that. I know we need some kind of creative breakthrough. 86 more likes for 1,000. Come on, y'all. I like that. See, whenever I have those cheerleaders out there, it makes my whole life different. Thank you, Joan Q. Public. Thank you very much. Great to see you. And Nathan Allen, again, very generous super chat for the show. Really appreciate that. And you know, support makes a lot of difference for us here. M. Rose, thank you very much. And to those of you who gave us super chats tonight, we really appreciate it. Helps us to carry on. And also to our subscribers, just remarkable, and those who contribute to the work we do. The extraordinary work, you know, we wouldn't have the ability to do any of it without you. So it really makes all the difference. And I thank you very much. On behalf of all of our Dark Journalist Ideas Room fans, it's great to see you. Kat is out there. Global Atlantis, be a member if you can. Yes, become a member at Dark Journalist. I've made it very affordable, and it's going to be very important that you do. We have a new website rolling out this summer. Been working on it. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Vicky May, love you, Daniel. We love you too. Thank you. Roosevelt, have a great weekend. It's great to see you out there, sir. who else have we got? Brandy? Need 1,800 likes. I like that. I agree. The more, the merrier. Thumbs up, everyone. Yes. Gracias. I love Olivia's insightful and impassioned questions. Let me tell you something. Whenever I go into the general admin Dark Journalist thing, the fan mail for Olivia goes up like that, and it is through the roof. So yes, I concur. And you know, she's a big star. Putin is not dying of cancer. That's disinformation. Aha, I know, they've been floating that one out a lot. Really interesting. How unusual. It's an interesting angle. Let's see here. Where's that disobey one? Oh, there it is. Disobey, resist, pray for Beijing, Shanghai, worldwide, stem the tide. Yeah, and you're right in the middle of that, and you've pointed it out that a lot of that's going on. I've been seeing so many things and news reports about it. Unbelievable authoritarian activity being taken by the Chinese government. And I mean, you know, prayers for the people there in China getting through this. Unbelievable. All right, let's see what else we got. Great couple of shows with Gigi. Unbelievable. Yeah, we have her. We're working on a very special show, Gigi Knows, and we're going to have that in June. Remarkable stuff that she's been doing with her Mars Mystery series. I mean, absolutely uncanny, just off the charts. And we're working on something very special that I think you guys are going to like. And it's coming up. Of course, there's going to be an astrology show sometime in the next month and a half, and I'm still fielding requests for who to put on that show. I have a lot of good recommendations. My first inclination was Susan Miller, who I've met and found just remarkable in general. But I know that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, people have very favorite astrologers. So I'm still discovering a lot of those people that are out there. David Bagley says, we outnumber the crooks. Yeah, and they're still busy saying, I am not a crook. But that's really a good point, which is we've got the numbers. What is the Jim Morrison song? They got the guns, but we got the numbers. He had it right, Jim, there, back in the 60s. Everyone, thanks so much. We will be back. Can't wait for Joseph. Yeah, Joseph's coming up, I think it's next week. And he, well... there are certain areas to go into with Joseph where there's nobody can compare, just hands down, fantastic. Mark Anthony, Jay Mallett, Gigi Abby Lynn, Nicholas Sangaris, outstanding. Everyone, we will see you next week, and we might have a special report coming up in between. Gigi has been out of this world with the last show. I agree. Outstanding. Whew. Scarlet Fire. Thank you very much, Brandy Renee. Just fantastic group out there in the Ideas Room tonight. And we'll see you all next week for sure. Special reports coming up, interviews coming up. The X Series 127, absolute mind blower. So have a great weekend, everyone. And remember to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for your newsletter, free newsletter. And we will see you all next week. And, you know, it says end broadcast, but after all, it never really ends. Have a great night, everyone.